Unwinding. He thought the thrill would have lasted longer, but after a big score, you had to go home, he supposed. You had to wash up and put food in your belly. Tonight, Arctic hen and sea prune stew. Obligations, none of them particularly exciting. Kavik emerged from his room, his prize stashed away, his hands and face cleaned of his activities. He hadn't spotted any visible wounds on his face, and neither had his parents. The Avatar's healing was flawless. "Are there any letters?" Kavik asked. He always asked. The answer was always no. "No," said his mother, who knew how important the question remained. "I checked not long before you returned." His father finished his tabulations, swiping back and forth in the air on an imagined abacus with his left hand and scratching the results into a book with his right. Once he was done, he put down his sharpened charcoal and got up from the desk. Kavik's mother brought the cook pot over to the rug and set it on the low table. Three settings lay equally distant from each other. As she ladled broth into their bowls, Kavik thought about what the Avatar had said earlier. Let things slide for too long, and you'd be tricked into thinking they'd always been that way. "What put you in the square at this hour?" his father asked. So much for the moment of quiet contemplation. Old Chan asked me to do a favor and pick up an order for him at the apothecary. Might as well reuse material. Kavik's parents had heard him talk about a string of odd jobs since leaving New Hingox. Currently, he was sweeping up at a tea shop. "I stopped by Chan's earlier," his father said. "He claims he hasn't seen you in weeks." Crud. An unforced error. They'd been doing so well for so long, avoiding conflict over Kavik's activities. But he supposed another round was due. The tides would always come in. "I was working on the other side of town," Kavik said truthfully. "I wasn't doing anything dangerous." "Less so. I didn't tell you I left Chan's because you worry about every little change that walks into my life." "I wish you didn't think us fools," his father said. "At least, tell us who your boss is, in case you disappear too." Too bad he couldn't, even if he wanted to. Kavik might have lied to the Avatar about not having a family, but the part about being an independent runner was accurate. He really wasn't in the pocket of Tae Yin or any of the merchant leaders. He'd managed to carve out a niche in Bin Er as the runner who didn't charge much and would take answers to certain questions instead of money. "Kavik," his mother said when he didn't respond, "you know where this path ends." "Yes," he said, his tongue loosening before he could stop it. "Right here, with the two of you doing absolutely nothing." "Kavik," his father said. It seemed so unfair, the way he had to heap point upon logical point whenever he argued with his parents, but all they had to do was say his name. He could never balance the scale when his feelings and ideas were considered moss against their stone. Months of pent-up frustration poured out. "You told me to wait. What has waiting gotten us? When I am out there, I am looking for him. I am following leads. I am working to get Kalyan back." "Kavik, please," his mother begged. "Please stop." "Stop hurting us," their faces said. "Stop breaking our hearts. We can't lose you, too." He came to with a blink. When had he raised his hands in the air? How loud had he gotten? He flushed with regret and shame. His mother and father were loving, kind, patient with him beyond reason. Losing control was a failure on his part to act grown. A knock came at the door. Thank the spirits for that. At this time of day, It was probably one of his father's colleagues from Nukhengux, coming by to pick up or drop off more paperwork. Kavik and his parents made sure their expressions were back in order, not wanting to show any signs of strife in front of a caller. They were on thin ice with the rest of the Water Tribe Quarter as it stood. His mother went to the front entrance and unlatched it. The door swung open, and she let out a cry. Her stoicism stripped away before it had a chance to settle.
By the lights!
Kavik thought she was screaming because of him. In a way, she was. Because a young air nomad woman now stood outside his house. Hello, the avatar said. She spotted Kavik over his mother's shoulder, and a gleaming smile spread across her face like a sharp knife slicing open a patch of leather.
My name is Yang Chen. May I come inside and talk for a moment?
The visitor. Kavik's mother tried to sink to her knees, but Yang Chen quickly put a stop to it, propping her up.
Please, please, Yang Chen said. I didn't mean to put you out.
Avatar, we are honored beyond belief, Kavik's father said.
He mopped his brow with his cuff, trying to remember the rules for greeting the greatest spiritual presence in the world.
Of course you may come in. Our home is your home.
Kavik's parents were better at recognizing faces from portraits than he was. Then again, the avatar did tell them her name right away. Yang Chen slipped off her shoes and stepped inside. She was alone.
You have a lovely house,
she said, wielding the compliment like a club against Kavik.
May I?
She held up her staff, indicating she wanted to lean it next to his parka. His parents nodded so hard, their heads threatened to fall off. They shuffled further and further backward, the deeper inside the house the avatar got. Kavik's mother reached up and pushed on the back of her son's neck. His gaze wasn't humbly lowered enough.
There's no need to be formal, Yang Chen said. Maybe consider this a visit of alms? Would that work?
For the sake of practicality, she was asking to be treated as regular air nomad, touching down on the middle of a journey to seek donations of food and shelter. But Kavik's parents would have pulled out every stop for that, too. Many families across the world would, regardless of nation or circumstance. To give hospitality to a monk or a nun was a great fortune, a peace laid upon one spirit. But not to Kavik. Not this time, and not with this nun. He was prey caught in a snare. Like a cornered lop-eared rabbit, he had to avoid thrashing his back out in fear.
Easy now, he thought, swallowing hard. This'll play out however it plays out. I don't have to be the one who makes the first move.
We were about to start dinner, his mother said. We would be blessed to share a meal with you.
She ushered Yang Chen over to the rug, but Kavik's father suddenly dove between the avatar and the pot, as if the steam itself would contaminate her.
Wait, he shouted. There's meat in the stew.
Kavik's mother went pale. She'd nearly corrupted the avatar with her carelessness. Tears welled in her eyes.
It's all right, Yang Chen said, trying her best to avoid a scene. The Western Temple believes we're allowed to consume meat if that's what's available for sharing. Some of us still abstain, but it's a choice. There's no harm done.
His mother didn't look convinced.
I can eat around it,
Yang Chen offered. The compromise was enough to prevent disaster. Kavik's father retrieved the fourth plate and rearranged their settings. North, east, south, and west once more. Yang Chen gracefully tucked her robes under her as she knelt.
Is it just the three of you? She asked.
There was a slight pause.
Yes. Kavik said.
It's just the three of us.
He glanced at his parents. They were unsure, but let him deal with the question.
We don't have many guests these days.
Bin-Ur is a busy city, as I've learned, Yang Chen said, fixing Kavik with her gaze. A lot going on.
Family and visitor ate their meals. Kavik's serving of stew had no sea prunes, his portion of the dried fruit given to the Avatar. His appetite had vanished anyway. The cookpot had become a pie show board. The girl across from him, his opponent.
If I may ask, what brought you to our door? His father asked.
I'm in the city on Avatar business, Yang Chen said. But to best serve people, I need to talk to them directly. Learn about their lives firsthand.
She managed to sip her broth at Kavik somehow.
Tell me about yourselves. What does your family do? How is life in the city?
His parents, unused to talking about themselves, started out slowly from the beginning. They were originally from the Long Stretch region, west of Agna Kala, normally a land rich with access to fishing grounds and roaming herds. But an extended spate of bad hunting seasons and poor catches led them to seek options. Encouraged by distant relations who had already crossed the straits, they came to Bin-Ur to ride out the hard times. The Shang system was still in its infancy back then, so the city was smaller and security wasn't so tight. The family set up in the Water Tribe Quarter, where some of their neighbors were former hunting partners. And they went to work at Nukhengak and Partners, where most of their colleagues were current neighbors. The little all-water tribe shop was one of the many counting houses that triple-checked the figures on the flow of trade goods between Shang cities, and it enjoyed a sterling reputation due to his folks' long memories and boundless patience.
How long ago was that? Yang Chen asked.
5 years, Kavik said.
Saying it out loud was a defeat in itself.
Have you ever thought about going back to the north?
Every stinking day.
The truth could have been more delicately phrased. His parents' disapproval was clear.
We would love to return home, his father said. But it's impossible to get real exit passes. The control office is so corrupt these days, you can only get clearance if it benefits the Shang somehow. They're able to bring as many workers as they want into Bin-Ur. But if you try to leave, suddenly you're a security risk.
Still, we've been the lucky ones, Kavik's mother said. The city's changed so much while we've been here. The newer arrivals, I don't know. The Shangs discard them like scraps at whim.
There was a riot in the town center today, Kavik muttered, stirring his bowl with his spoon. Folks are starting to get fed up.
He looked across the pot to see the Avatar, genuinely taken aback. She hadn't been aware of the violence taking place a few blocks away from her quarters. She couldn't really be blamed for not knowing. Based on the timing, she would have been meeting with dignitaries in the Blue Manse while the square grew heated.
I want to change that, Yang Chen said, repeating her earlier statement when she and Kavik had been alone. I want to change how the vulnerable are treated.
Kavik believed her, but it wasn't like telling him and his parents was going to do much about the situation. She needed to be talking to the people with power in Bin-Ur.
It's nice to want things, he said.
He should have kept his mouth shut. Yang Chen raised an eyebrow at his sarcastic comment, the motion made prominent by her missing hair, and decided a response was in order. She pushed her bowl aside.
Your son, she said sternly to Kavik's mother and father. As delightful as this visit has been, he's the real reason I'm here. Did he tell you what he did earlier? The air went deathly quiet. The night had been one of the most joyous occasions in his parents' lives, and now it threatened to sink into the abyss due to their child's foolishness. A rebuke from the Avatar herself. They'd never survive the shame. What did he do? Kavik's father croaked. The Avatar turned and looked at Kavik the way an assassin might drink in her victim's dying groans while wrenching the knife back and forth.
He stopped a thief for me.
All eyes turned toward Kavik. Yang Chen did not elaborate. She was going to let him find his way out of the forest she'd dropped him in. He had to pull together a few scattered pieces, backtrack over who in his audience knew what information.
I went to the square late in the day because I heard rumors something was about to go down, and I was curious, he said.
Seeking out danger would be the crime in his delayed confession to his parents.
So, I was walking along the edge of the crowd, and I see this man running away from some guards. He was holding a satchel in his hands, which was weird. Normally you'd sling a bag around your shoulder, right?
Yang Chen tilted her head back, as if she were trying to get a better look at him with the benefit of distance. This was the second time he'd lied in front of her. There was a chance she was impressed.
I didn't get in his way, Kavik said. That would have been dangerous. I kind of stepped aside and then slapped the satchel out of his hands as he passed. He kept running. The guards thanked me and took the bag away. And then I left. I didn't know it was related to Avatar business.
There. Perfect. His parents didn't have to imagine him facing down a dangerous criminal, and he didn't have to admit to meeting Yang Chen in person.
Your son recovered a crucial piece of political information, she said, picking up where he left off with ease. Without him, I couldn't tell you what might have happened.
A slow shake of her head implied the worst. War, famine, spiritual barrenness spreading across the land.
How did you know where to find me? Kavik asked her.
Only he and the Avatar recognized the question as a counterpunch.
I went. Now it's your turn. How did you know where I lived when you didn't see me yourself?
Oh, I arrived a little while after and asked the witnesses, she said breezily. One of them said they recognized you and gave me your address.
Yang Chen bowed to his parents.
Kavik did the world a service today. Is it all right if I talk to him alone for a bit?
Not only did they agree, they nearly dismissed themselves from the main chamber. The Avatar asked Kavik to show her to his room. His mother gave him a glare, warning him not to embarrass the family. By the time Kavik closed the door, Yang Chen was already looking around, taking in every detail she could to build a picture of him. Books, lack of books, level of tidiness. Was he a person who kept mementos, decorations, weapons? She finished her sweep.
Really? She said. You sleep in a completely bare room, with nothing on the walls and no furniture other than a bed? A man with nothing to hide. You'd fit in fine at the temples.
You followed me.
He was so sure he'd been careful.
I did. She raised a finger. Most people forget to look up.
Her glider. She'd been flying above him the whole time with a perfect view, probably laughing at his efforts to cover his trail.
Aw, don't look so glum.
Yang Chen punched him lightly in the arm.
You got moves. Good ones.
How stupid was he to think he had successfully played her? Those little gestures of openness she'd made while she was healing him? The parted lips, the slight nods. She'd been putting him at ease.
Now her expression was full of mocking sorrow. Pretty low of you to lie to me the way you did, when so many people in the city are living on the edge. From what I can tell, you have a loving family and a roof over your head.
She reached out and brushed her fingertips along the wall.
I mean, there's a full second story on this house. You're a rich kid.
Not that rich, Kavik muttered, fully conscious that he was using the same defense the merchants used when they turned down Mama Ayunarok's requests for donations.
But not that poor. I followed you to see which Shang you reported to. Imagine my surprise to find you had a separate little base of your own. Your parents don't know the full extent of your activities, do they? Why are you running errands and nearly freezing to death when you could be working alongside friends and neighbors at the bookkeepers, safe and warm?
Why, indeed. There were answers that were given, and there were answers that were earned. The Avatar hadn't earned squat from him. I value my freedom, he said, managing to say it slowly and curtly at the same time. Kavik hoped she had enough pieces of the puzzle to leave his room, leave his house, leave him alone. Instead, Yang Chen sat down on his bed without asking and made herself comfortable, crossing one knee over the other, holding it in place with her hands.
Well, that's too bad, she said. Everyone you meet in Bin Er is in someone else's pocket. From the moment you appeared, I was trying to figure out whose pocket you were in. Now I finally have the answer.
A fresh slash of a grin spread across her face.
Mine, Avatar Yang Chen declared. Now you're in mine.
The proposition. Kavik did what he forgot to do at the beginning of this conversation and took a quick peek outside to see if his parents were eavesdropping. They were not. Of course they respected the Avatar's privacy more than his own. He shut the door again and leaned his back against it, forced to the edge of his own room by this invading presence.
If you're going to have me punished, just do it and get it over with.
I'm not turning you into anyone, Yang Chen said. This is a recruitment pitch. I want your skills put to use for a nobler cause.
She paused and then clarified.
Me. I'm the nobler cause.
You want me to run errands for you?
This was a world leader he was talking to, not a low-rent broker like Chiu.
Why?
Because I can't run them all myself. To be an effective avatar, one needs to make informed decisions. Informed decisions require good information. And the information I get fed on a regular basis by my so-called advisors and companions is lacking.
She saw he was confused.
Think about it, she said. I may be the most watched and scrutinized person in the Four Nations. All of the attendants foisted upon me by the leaders of the world, the ministers, the diplomats, advisors, sages. They're spies, more often than not. Spies reporting back on me to their real masters. In the past, I've had my decisions leaked before I've announced them, my moves anticipated before anyone could guess, and been fed falsehoods till bursting.
She hugged her knees again and swung her feet back and forth.
So, while in the open, I adhere to tradition. I attend the meetings, I perform the ceremonies, but when I need to gather information or act in secret, without the trappings of the office weighing me down, I do it out of sight, with the help of a small number of associates who I know aren't compromised. Here is where you come in.
This wasn't the same person Kavik had surprised in her room. The gentle nun who'd healed his face. He could have been talking to a Bin Er native right now. one of the shrewd youths who thought of everything in terms of transactions. Even the way she strung her words together was more broker than wise woman.
You could get anyone in the world to work for you, Kavik said.
Why would you pick me? You don't know me.
We have no connection.
That's precisely why I want you, Yang Chen said. Good candidates don't fall into my lap very often. You're from a comfortable family, not beholden to anyone by money or debt. You're too low level to be worth anyone's attention, but just skilled enough to be useful.
Wow, thanks.
I'm not selling you short, Yang Chen said. I completely bought your act about not having a family. It's very rare these days that I can't tell someone is lying to my face. And you really do have moves. You would have gotten away from the guards if I hadn't personally intervened.
Twice.
Kavik shut his eyes. Of course. The Avatar was a waterbender by definition. She'd been the one who'd trapped him by his feet. And the one who'd yanked him back inside the blue manse with precise airbending.
Do you have other people working for you?
Not as many as I'd like. Normally I have to stick to close friends. Those who owe me favors. Fanatic devotees to the Avatar. I need more help. Serving the world requires new blood. What do you say?
He didn't have to think very hard. No, he said. Thank you for the offer, but no. I appreciate your consideration. No.
Oh, I'm sorry, Yang Chen said, undaunted. I didn't mean to imply you were that special of a case. You fit neatly into the category of owes me. I did save you from punishment for your very serious crimes. Not every avatar in history took attempted theft of intelligence as lightly as I did.
You're gonna blackmail me?
She didn't seem terribly insulted by the accusation. I wouldn't put it that way. I'm giving you the chance to do some real good, and hoping you take it. The Shang cities, Bin-er, Zhanduri, Taku, Tugak, are wellsprings of corruption and suffering. Some of them are just more obvious than others. I need someone like you, who knows this kind of environment, to help me fix their problems. Think of it as doing exactly the type of work you've been doing, only with me as your broker.
She drummed her fingers on the edge of his bed.
But you're right. It's not fair for me to threaten you with the inside of a jail cell. And you catch more ant flies with honey than vinegar.
Yang Chen popped up and waved her fingers at Kavik. A gust of wind from a point of origin that should have been too close to exist pushed him out of the way. She left his room without waiting for him.
Hey, Kavik said, trailing after her. What are you?
The Avatar re-entered the main chamber. Kavik's parents looked up from where they sat waiting.
I have an announcement, Yang Chen said to them, as proud as a Sifu graduating her student. In recognition of his good heart and bravery, I have offered your son the chance to become one of my official companions, to stand by my side and help me keep the world in balance.
Kavik's mother shrieked in joy. His father tried to say something, but had to turn his face to hide the tears of pride gushing from his eyes. Companions of the Avatar went down in the annals of history. Their truant son was going to make greatness of himself. Their suffering hadn't been in vain. Truly, utterly, they'd been blessed tonight. Kavik watched his parents bawl into each other's shoulders with happiness.
You're free to refuse, of course, Yang Chen whispered out of the corner of her mouth. My offer of companionship is legitimate. You can say no.
Like he could and still live here. She'd as good as pushed him off a cliff. With each ecstatic sob from his mother and father, another chunk of Kavik's spirit left his body. I hate you, he muttered.
I'll let you sleep on it, the Avatar replied. The Parade. Yang Chen opened her eyes and stared up at the ceiling. Clay, not ice. Still Bin Er, though. Still Yang Chen. She was pretty sure of it. She lay in bed and went through the exercises Abbess Damola had developed for her when she was younger. She thought about the previous night's events, linked them to her tasks for the day to come, and purposely skipped over the wild clash that had gone on inside her head in between, forging a mindful connection to herself. The idea was to create a sturdy bridge between the banks of her memories. Only sometimes it was afloat with a fraying rope tied to it, hurled a bit short. Today was especially confusing due to the change in sleeping accommodations. After the intrusion, Masters Sidao and Boma both had insisted on relocating. Yang Chen rejected all of Sidao's suggestions for new guest houses. Those were likely spots he'd scouted in advance, with plenty of listening nooks and hidden doors only he knew about. She'd chosen a new place to sleep at random. Semi-random. Her instincts may have led her to point at the map and land on a small ancient inn that mercifully turned out to have heated floors. She wasn't as good at ignoring temperatures as her sisters and brothers. Found the warming breath of fire technique draining on her energy reserves, and the Bin Er winter was a hostile beast, full of intent and malice. The out-of-the-way location served a purpose besides comfort. She had to take the precaution that Kavik wasn't the first part of a double beat, a ruse designed to give her a worthless victory, while the real theft happened in the aftermath once everyone's vigilance subsided. The boy's name was Kavik. A smile played across her lips. She was jealous in a way. Last night's follies would be a lighthouse in his memories. He was never going to forget the day he ran into the Avatar twice. Master Boma knocked on the door.
Avatar, came the gruff grandfatherly voice. Breakfast is ready. Master Sidao said that if we want to keep our schedule with the Shangs, you should eat soon.
The Avatar doesn't answer to the Shangs, Yang Chen thought. Thousands of years do not give way to a decade. I'll be down momentarily, she said. The interruption knocked Yang Chen out of her flow. She found resuming the mental exercises where she left off too daunting. Starting over again an impossibility. So she didn't. Herein was the danger. Not that Abbess Damola's wisdom wasn't effective, but that Yang Chen, with increasing frequency, didn't follow it. She got up slowly out of habit. Sometimes she could forget her joints were still young, only 17 years of use on them. She propped herself up against the wall, hoping the cloudiness would drain out of her head, and lifted her arms for Pick and Pock to land on them. They didn't come. Right. She'd left her winged lemurs in the care of the Northern Air Temple. Maybe she should have finished building the bridge after all. To avoid thinking about it, she turned her attention to the mound of clutter in her room. Her documents had been moved here from the Blue Manse in a hurry. Her notes were out of order, her speech drafts were scattered everywhere, and worst of all, relocating her quarters had given unvetted people a chance to examine her research and correspondence. The double beat could have happened during the transfer. Yang Chen moved to the edge of her bed and plucked a roll of paper off the pile. The one Kavik had tried to steal. She spread the architectural plan of the old Bin Er gathering hall across her lap. The building had been torn down and reconstructed so many times that several different people thought they held the original designs. But this was the true oldest version, its provenance guaranteed by one of Yang Chen's trusted sources. She examined the layout of the structure from corner to corner. A good general studied the terrain, whether a battle was on the horizon or not. A sailor watched the skies, even when they were clear. And Yang Chen had been both of those at some point. If she couldn't make any progress in her formal meeting today, she'd have to resort to unconventional methods. She spotted an interesting detail in the plans. The gray fuzz between her ears began to clear. Well, what do you know? She thought. Heated floors. One of the few joys she could pursue in public these days was messing with Sidao. The Minister of Special Territory Relations was an ever-growing presence in her retinue, and he often acted more like a tutor of etiquette. She wasn't supposed to plummet in from the sky on Nu Jian when meeting dignitaries to conduct formal business, nor was she supposed to glide. She was the Avatar, not a screeching bird of prey. Riding on the ground to her destination projected the correct aura of dignity. It also let her publicly send signals and declare favor through her choice of companion. For example, the special territory minister's importance might be demonstrated to all by giving him a seat close to hers during processions. In compliance, Yang Chen had taught Nu Jian to perform an exaggerated trot whenever they had to satisfy Sidao's definition of procedure, mimicking the high-stepping bounce of beasts with fewer legs. It looked ridiculous and made children laugh, and Sidao suddenly no longer wanted to accompany her on the way to her conferences. Victories all around. Today, in the glistening cold, she rode through Bin Er on Nu Qian's withers, while Boma sat behind her in the saddle. He was used to any sort of ride, bumpy or smooth or through the sky in a storm. The residents of Bin Er lined the main street for a chance to see the Avatar. If it made them happy, she would show her face. Sidao shivered in the open-topped carriage ahead of her. He hailed from Nanyan, near Foggy Swamp, and the cold disagreed with him worse than it did Yang Chen. "Mistress Avatar," he said, turning around in his seat to face her. The tonic he used in the foot-long beard that hung off his chin must have been water-based, because it was starting to turn into an icicle. "May I remind you that she who commands all four elements still cannot bend time? Our delays compound." "Ah, the falling grain of sand, the merciless hound at our heels, the spoke of the season's wheel," Yang Chen quoted. Whenever Sidao got cranky about the schedule, she liked to pluck adages from ages past to remind him what time really meant in the grand scheme of things. 10 tons of bison running hard along the ground will feel like an earthquake and damage property. You may go on ahead to inform the Shangs we're running behind." Her permission to leave gave Sidao pause. "I know you're on their payroll," she thought. "Show me who your true masters are, whom you're really afraid of displeasing." With a frown, Sidao told his driver to speed up and round the bend. There it was. Leaving the Avatar in the dust was rude for someone so concerned with etiquette, but duty called. It was just her and Boma on Nu Jian now. Yang Chen looked around. She'd thrown her hood back, and the crowd had reciprocated the gesture by uncovering their heads as well. Their gazes shining, rapt. So many of them had their hands clasped in front of their chests in a universal symbol. "Please." "I'm trying," she thought. This might be the only glimpse of her they got in their lives. She would have liked to stop and talk with a few of them, like she had with Kavik's parents last night. But she really didn't have the time today. The Avatar's personal blessing was much sought after, but it scaled horribly as a good. Bin Er needed more than a wave and a smile anyway. The Shangs had done their best to scrub the streets for her visit, The parade route took her through the prosperous neighborhoods, past the pointed houses of commerce and the frozen fountains, showed off the carved gabled architecture of an older version of the city that hadn't been relevant for decades. But it wasn't enough to fool the eyes of an air nomad, sharpened by gazing across mountain peaks. Not 5 minutes into her procession, Yang Chen had spotted an overlooked alleyway full of abandoned blankets and mats, their owners probably told to vacate or suffer the consequences. This couldn't stand. You couldn't put all your grain on one corner of the saddle and expect to remain in balance.
"Perhaps we could hurry a bit more," Boma said in the back, jarring her back into place.
"Worried about the Shang's patience, too?"
"No, it's the crowd. They're a little close for my liking."
Boma usually wasn't so curt when it came to the throngs of the devout. As if to agree with him, Nu Jian grumbled and snorted, breaking his stride. Yang Chen looked around. The captivated front lines had pushed forward a bit, but that wasn't a problem. Not compared with the figures lurking behind them who'd kept their hoods on. 3 men trying to keep pace with her. All right. It came with the territory. She'd come here because people were unhappy. It would be unfair for her to be bothered by the presence of unhappy people. She knew she was dealing with troublemakers, not assassins. She'd seen this very incident play out through the eyes of her predecessors and felt little danger. Landing a shot on her by surprise would be difficult enough. While cold was a foe beyond her, she was excellent at feeling and reacting to air flows. The rotten fruit that came flying at her head might as well have been moving at a snail sloth's pace. Yang Chen formed a small cyclone with a flick of her wrist and used the funnel of air to guide the missile into her hand. "Papaya," she noted with some amusement. They must have scavenged refuse from a household rich enough to import.
"Ah!"
The sound of shattering clay turned her head. Boma held his face while blood dripped down his fingers. The fragments of an empty jug lay scattered over the saddle. A red rage swelled through Yang Chen's veins. They couldn't hit her, so they'd aimed at an old man. Her friend. She rose higher on her bison's neck.
"I am here to help you," she shouted.
Nu Jin reacted to her runaway emotions and slammed the gigantic paddle of his tail down. A gust of wind rushed outward, flattening the crowd. Any screams of fear were blown far away. Amid the half-ring of stunned people, Yang Chen saw the person who'd thrown the jug. It wasn't a young miscreant. It was a man who was the same age as Boma, if not older. She could read the fear and bitterness in his eyes like a scroll.
"What help? You up there and us down here, what help?"
It didn't matter that as an air nomad, she owned fewer possessions than anyone here. She had freedom. She had status. The most status, in fact. More status than anyone else in the world. But as soon as she followed Su Dao's path, rounded the corner, and disappeared from sight, these onlookers would return to their lives no better off than before. Unless she could do something for them, even the most fervent believers in the Avatar would realize she was a brief breeze on a scorched day, pleasant for a moment, but ultimately meaningless. Some would turn to sorrow, others anger. The man who'd struck Boma was simply further along the journey than most. In a fit of frustration, she hurled the brown oozing fruit in her hand at the wall high above his head. The skin burst, sending seeds and foul pulp raining down. Someone yelped in terror. She knew she'd regret the act tomorrow, if not minutes from now. Such outbursts poked a hole in the painting of her and let the real light through. Yang Chen shook her head and spurred Nu Jian onward.